Just so I don't forget. Off.
Oh.
Morning.
Thank everybody for their prayers, but Jeannie's cousin passed Friday.
Okay.
The lady that I was telling you about. Yes, Penny. Yeah.
Okay. No, praying for her.
Well, I know. Been being reversed. Awful.
Wonderful, Mary. I see in your name, Mary.
Hey, there's BJ and Larry waiting for you guys. Good morning. We wait for Zelda and then close it.
She might be getting coffee, so it might take a while.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Those of you who are here in person and those who are connected by electrons, you are more than welcome. For those of you who might be new, just dropping in, by the way, anybody can drop in anytime you want to. There's no requirements for this group. We do use a book, but you don't even have to have one because we read out of the book as part of the lesson in the morning. So if you decide, some people just come in, like the energy, stay there for a while, come back when they want to. Like I said, anybody is more than welcome. Primary message that we are dealing with is that most of us are living in a case of mistaken identity. We have forgotten who we truly are. We have forgotten our divine consciousness. We've forgotten our divine connection with a higher power in our lives. We've forgotten the essence of the truth of who we are. And this is here to remind us of that truth. It's just 45 minutes out of a week, but hopefully that 45 minutes can stretch into a little bit longer time when you remember or recall who you are, the truth of who you are. The book we're using is a channeled work by Paul Selig, whose original book was called I Am the Word. And for those of you who have been following us along, we're coming to the end of this book. So sometime this year, because we're not in any rush, we're not going to finish a book on any given day, but sometime this year we're going to be changing to another book. And I'm not having taken a vote on this, but I'm presuming most people would like to stick with some of Paul Selig's material. And if that's true, we're going to be moving to a book called The Book of Innocence, which is a couple of jumps forward. But Margot and I both started reading that sometime last year and felt like it fit in very, very nicely with this material, but also kind of pushed us a little bit further than we were at, you know, maybe a week ago or a month ago or 6 months ago. So if you want to get a head start on that, you might want to check out The Book of Innocence by Paul Selig. And so as we begin this morning, let's begin the way we usually do. Close your eyes if you like. Take a couple of breaths. Relax. Soften. You might want to repeat these words internally to yourself. I am opening myself up to the truth of who I really am and who I have always been. There is nothing, absolutely nothing, that can separate me from my divine self, my divine consciousness. I might forget once in a while. We all do. But I am grateful for those moments that I can remember. And as I remember who I am, I remember who you are as well. I am given the ability to see through all of the masks and all of the disguises to the truth of who I am and the truth of who you are. Deep breath. Come on back to your awareness of being here in this room. So I hope you had a great Christmas. I hope you had, if you traveled, hope you traveled well and healthy. We were up in Chicago for a few days before Christmas and a little bit after, and everybody up there is doing well. Got a chance to see all the kids, all the grandkids. But it's always nice to be back home. So we're back home. Looking forward to doing and being whatever it is we're doing and being in these next 45 minutes without rushing things. By the way, if anybody ever has a question, if you happen to be really new and it's a question about the material, I would prefer that you emailed me or called me, and then we could take care of that without stepping on anybody else's toes, without repeating a whole lot of information. But if it happens to come about that you have a comment to make or a reflection on the material that we used this morning, please don't hesitate to chime in. I'm going to begin on page 333. And if you don't have a book, all you need to do is listen. Down towards the bottom, the last paragraph. I am word through all that I see before me. Is a claim of great beauty, and you are calling the vibration of the Creator in witness through all you see. That might be a way of summarizing most of this work. I am word, I am word, I am a reflection of God, a reflection of divine consciousness. I am word through all that I see before me. Nothing is left out. Absolutely nothing. No matter how it might seem, no matter how it might appear. If I think it's left out and I say, well, I'm here in divine consciousness, but you're out there someplace, it doesn't work anymore. It has to work for everybody or everything, or it doesn't work at all. There's a, I know I've mentioned this before, but there's a school in Buddhism called the Mahayana, which is sometimes translated as being the big boat or the great vessel. And the philosophy behind it is the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. So instead of everybody working for their own individual enlightenment, which you can do if you want to, but the essence of enlightenment is that not only do you have it, but everybody has it. I'm still working on that one. By the way, I'm still working on all this stuff. I'm just a, how did Ram Dass put it? He said, I'm a rent-a-mouth. I rent my mouth out for the next 45 minutes, and whatever comes out is not necessarily mine or even yours. Right? Hopefully it's the movement of the spirit with me and for me and through me and through me and with you and through you as well. Because I certainly don't know any more than you do. And you don't know any more than I do either. When you stand on a corner, remember we thought about Thomas Merton when we read this last week. When you stand on a corner and you look at those walking by, know that they are meeting their true destiny. Everybody's trip is perfect. Might not seem that way. It's perfect. Each man's destiny is reunion with the source of its being, no matter what she has been through or what he has known himself as. We teach you now the song of your soul. It will be heard by those you may meet or may never meet in this physical realm. When we teach you the song, we teach you the language. But the language itself is not the song. The song is the vibration that it endows upon all that is before her. The frequency is the song. The words are the utterance that calls the frequency in forward motion. In other words, there's a big difference between listening to Beethoven's Fifth Piano Concerto and having the music printed out in front of you and looking at it from note to note. Same thing. Well, not the same thing. Well, it's a different experience. So what they're saying here, we're going beyond the words. We're going into the vibration. They talk about vibration an awful lot, or vibration or alignment. And put it in the most simplest terms. If I would say to you, I love you, you could hear those words and you could take them into your heart, say, well, that's very nice, thank you very much. Or you could choose to align yourself with the energy of being loved. And it's a whole different experience. One's up here and one's here. The song of my life is the song of freedom. The song of my truth is the song of great joy. The song of my love is my heart in its opening. And the song of my gain is the gifts I give to others. The song of my rapture is my own awakening to each day. And the song of my passing is my entry into the new world that is born before me. The song of my life is here to be sung. I am here, I am here, I am here. It doesn't matter whether you understand that or not. It's not about understanding that, it's about taking that in as being a truth. We will stop for a moment, but before we stop, we need to attend those who are in doubt. I've read this book thus far. Maybe I felt something. Maybe I didn't. What happens to me? What has this journey been? What has it been like? What brought me here? The guides answer the question. The consciousness you hold, the freedom that you have to be in receipt of this vibration, the intellect you hold, which allows you to accept or perhaps reject the teachings is in your purview. We do not take away your free will. But if you have given yourself permission to be in receipt of this teaching, I am free to choose, I am free to know, I am allowed to receive what I need to know. You have gained the frequency as your field, and the embarkation to the journeys we have described will commence when you can hold them. The guides are suggesting, I'm not going to take you any place you don't want to go. It's your choice. It's your choice to be as open or as closed, as intellectual or as spiritual as you choose to be. And I'm not sure about you, but it's quite often that I don't even realize I have all those choices. I've gone through days in my life. Sometimes I've gone through weeks in my life. And all of a sudden waking up for a moment and say, where the hell was I? Was I here? Was well, I, you know, I was kind of like a wind-up toy. I was doing my job. I was doing my work. I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. But I really wasn't present. And I recall somebody asking me one time, who are the teachers in your life, the official teachers in your life that you remember the most? And I said, you know, there's two guys that stand out for me, two of my high school teachers that really stand out for me. And I don't remember a whole lot about what they taught me, but I do remember them being present to me. They treated me not as a kid. They treated me as a fellow human being. And they were just truly present in consciousness to me, to who I was and what I was going through at that particular moment. And I never forgot that. Those are the people we are closest to in our lives. The ones who are truly, truly present to us. And the ones that we are truly present to. Yeah, Rhonda?
It's funny you mentioned that. The only teachers that ever made a difference in my life were the ones who were standing up. Those are the ones that I remember.
The ones who what?
The other ones that mm-hmm. they didn't make it.
They saw you as a person.
They looked me in the eye.
Mm-hmm. And you knew that.
And that's what we lost with COVID. And that's why I think we lost so many things, mm-hmm. interactions.
And you might not have been able to realize that at that moment. But looking back, you say, wow, what a difference. What a difference.
Power to interaction. Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly a moment to be grateful for. Because people who are present to us teach us being present to others. Not in so many words, but in truth. People who love us unconditionally teach us how to love unconditionally. Without words. I remember the person who taught me unconditional love when I became consciously aware it was my mother's sister, my aunt. I can't tell you exactly how or when or why, but she was always, when I was in her presence, she always seemed to be very grounded and very present and has just continually sent forth that message, I love you. I love you for who you are. It's real interesting. Her son, my cousin Fred, got that same message from my mother. I'm glad we were aware of that. The consciousness you hold, who you are in this moment, the freedom that you have to be in receipt of this vibration. Oh, I read that part already. Sorry. I'm on page 335. This is very important to understand. Paul is seeing somebody in a hotel room in a foreign country. They have a tummy ache. They know the tour goes to the next country, but they prefer to stay in the hotel and wait for the next car to take them. They will integrate what they have learned before moving on to the next stage of the adventure. The same will be true for you. One teacher friend of Margot's and I likes to talk about planet Earth as being a classroom. And she said, this is the third level of learning that we do. And the primary elements of the third element of learning that we do is learning how to love unconditionally. She said, what's really interesting is people hear that message and say, okay, that's level three. Now what's level four about? She said, that's an interesting question, but it's never going to get answered until you finish with level three. That's one of the things I like with this work is that it doesn't push you to do something differently than where you are at, but you can be open to that as being your truth. The same will be true for you. You will be taught and you will learn at the level of your consciousness, at the level of your understanding. Not what your intellect wants, but what your soul desires. You understand, yes? That as you choose this path, you choose an adventure. An adventure is never predictable. One of the ways I've learned to shut up my ego once in a while is to ask it, when was the last time you predicted the future with any accuracy? And that's the one question, at least I've discovered so far, that it doesn't have a very good answer to. It doesn't know. Its vision of the future is based on past experience. The adventure is never predictable. If you knew the ending of it, would you even bother going? We have taught you that who you are as a divine being may be known to you in a full way, and we are teaching you still that the life that you live must become the expression of this as the field you hold has transformed. In simple language, you are not just here to learn unconditional love, you are here to be unconditional love. That's your truth. Not to just do it, but to be it. Some of you might say, but I don't want to change. Then you will not have to have it. But you must understand that consciousness and transformation requires change. And change usually is uncomfortable and awkward at times. And that's just part of the process. Now, a change for one of you may be vastly different than for somebody else. One of you may awaken to the beauty of what's before you, and the next one may decide that she is in the wrong job, living in the wrong town, and she is being called forward to a new life. And by the way, this movement of change or transformation might be a better word to use, is happening all the time. What one of my teachers calls, what's your growing edge? Where are you being called to grow or to move at this particular moment in your life? And what we'll probably do is we'll probably end with that question. Excuse me, when we get ready to do our meditation at the end of class. But it would also be a question I would encourage you to stay with it. What is your growing edge? What in my life am I being called to move with or move on? For me, it's to work on being awake and being aware more often and better than I am. And you know how I know when I'm not aware, when I'm not really awake, is when I start becoming really impatient. And as soon as I start, as soon as I, you know, I wish I could catch myself right away, but I don't, all right? But as soon as I realize I'm becoming impatient, I realize, oops, I've just sort of shut the door on my reality. I've become this little tiny self-centered being, right? Rather than this divine consciousness that I know that I am. So for me, that's a great sign. Now, what I have to work on and become aware of is becoming aware of when I'm becoming impatient, because sometimes it might take me for a ride. But I'm getting a little bit better at that. I recognize, oh, I'm becoming antsy, I'm becoming impatient. That means I'm out of balance. I'm not connected with the truth of who I am. It's not a judgment, that's just an awareness. And then asking myself, not even analyzing my impatience, that's rather silly. Just recognizing, how can I center myself again in this moment? And we all have different ways of doing that. Breathing, just taking a deep breath. In 12-step recovery literature, it says, oh, we learn to pause when agitated. What a beautiful, beautiful man. We learn to pause when agitated. Now I have to remember, I have to be awake enough to know that I'm agitated. But if I am, I can take a breath. I can pause. I can remind myself I'm in divine consciousness. I know the truth of who I am. There's lots of ways of doing that. You find a way that works for you. They are both great changes. Seeing the beauty that is in this particular moment, or recognizing that I'm in a place where my growth is being stunted and I need to make a change. They are both great changes, but the one who opens her eyes to the beauty that has always been there has been released from the veils of fear that have precluded her from seeing the beauty, and that is an enormous change. Wonder what it would be like to flip on the news and see the beauty of all the people who are characterized there, rather than judging. I'd be working on that one for a while. The one who opens her eyes to the beauty that has always been there has been released from the veils of fear that have precluded her from seeing the beauty. And that is an enormous change. We have a granddaughter who's a special needs kid. And without going into a whole lot of detail, it's funny, I was looking on my phone when we were up in Chicago. And you know, some of the iPhones, they flash memories of pictures. So these are some pictures we took about, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. And so it flipped on some photographs of Aoife that I had taken of her. And I remember looking at the photographs and saying, oh, she was such a cute kid. And then I said to myself, because I was standing right next to her, can I see the beauty in her right now in this moment? And I could. And it was an amazing little awakening. Seeing this rather broken body, but seeing the being behind the broken body. It was so much more than that. So much more than a beautiful little child, but a beautiful little soul. Released from the veils of fear that have precluded her from seeing the beauty. And that is an enormous change. Paul is interrupting. For those of you who knew, Paul is the guide, the channel for this work. And he's also sort of volunteered to be the every man or the every person. I'm going to ask the questions anybody else is afraid to ask. So I'm taking a risk here. Paul is interrupting. He knows that some people read a text and make foolish decisions. They said that I was changing. What am I going to be changing next? And he is accurate in this assessment. Those of you who go around saying, I read a book, it said I was changing, so I'm repainting the living room, and I'm leaving my spouse and moving to another country. Or whatever you decide you need to do, may well be acting in folly and out of your own desires. Please understand, everyone, that the changes that come are the changes you require for your growth, for your stretching. This does not prohibit you from action, but you must understand that the divine as you is your teacher now. And prejudice, we say, of what you have, because it is not new, is not the way to go about transformation. When you react to what is there because it is there, you are actually missing the point. I am word through this thing before me, supports you in transformation. I don't know where that's going. I don't know what that's going to look like in the future right now, but I know I will be guided. It's like that wonderful prayer from Thomas Merton. I have no idea where I'm going, but I know you are guiding me in the right direction. So I'm not saying, well, I feel uncomfortable with this, so I need to change it. Maybe the discomfort is exactly what I need in this moment. So this is not an intellectual decision. To act upon the change through the small self, while it is your purview, may not be for the highest good. It might just be a selfish decision. So we would recommend you sit quietly and know who you are before embarking on any action that you feel is predicated by reading this text, or any other text for that matter. We are going to tell you something important. The changes that come are the changes you need. But the lessons may not be known to you as the changes are happening. We've mentioned this a number of times in working with this book, that when I dedicate myself to growth, I might be growing in some ways on an unconscious level that I don't even recognize are happening. Sometimes I don't realize that I've changed until circumstances arise in my life and I find myself responding to those situations differently than I did before. I went, oh, something shifted in my consciousness and I didn't even know it shifted. So sometimes it's going to take circumstances that we're used to acting a certain way out, acting a certain way, and having the same circumstances arise in our lives and finding that we're reacting or responding to those situations in a more loving, kind, less patient, or more patient way than I might have before. Again, that has a lot to do with our own awareness.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Greg. Go ahead.
One of the things that Michael Beckwith has spoken about, and he talks about that growth mindset. And 12 steps also teaches me that. It encouraged me to, if someone's being critical of me, let's see if there's some grains of truth in that, like mm-hmm. that growth mindset, or a calamity or a difficulty happens. After that initial emotional fear rises, take a look and see, what does this have to teach me? Like, I can't always do that, but I totally understand what you're saying with growth mindset. Yeah, I must have had some part in creating this too. You know,
mm-hmm.
when there's relationship difficulties, therapists always say, well, it's never just one person that takes two to dance, though each one is contributing somehow to the problem. So how do we do that in a loving way for ourselves without, oh, I'm so bad and broken, to not be guilt ridden with it, but what do I have to learn from this? Okay, I can work on getting better by taking a look at this and dusting myself off and trying to go forward in a better way. Just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Greg. That's a great lesson. That's a great way of responding to train ourselves. What does this have to teach me? I had a friend of mine when I was working up in Columbus, Indiana. Her name was Molly. Molly Malone, to be exact. And I can remember visiting Molly one time, and I was playing with her cats. We were talking about something. And she talked about something going on in her life. And she said, you know what? I need to find out what the lesson is here. And so she started pacing up and down her living room floor. What's the lesson? What's the lesson? What's the... Kept asking the question until she got an answer. Because she wasn't always comfortable with the answer. But the answer always was something that guided her in one way or another, in that she knew she needed at that particular moment. What's the lesson here? What is this teaching me? Thank you, Greg.
Hey, Jerry.
Thank you, Molly. Yeah, Jim.
You said something just about a couple minutes ago. And I may have mentioned this before, and it's the why. And I say the why, in other words, once when I embarked on this journey of unfoldment or this path, is it intellectual pursuit? Is it whatever it is? I had to just hunker down and I had to center myself and ask myself, why is Jim doing this? And it kind of harkens me back way back. I was thinking about when I was younger about becoming a vegetarian. And I know someone who owned a restaurant, a vegan restaurant. And I told her, and she looked at me, and she said, well, why? And I says, what? She says, if you don't have a compelling why to want to change your diet and transform, as soon as it gets hard and difficult, you'll get rid of it. So it's, that's what I've been hunkering down on his journey. What's Jim's why? Why do I want to take classes? Why do I want to unfold? And once, when I get those answers, it allows me to keep moving forward.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, even when we get the answer to a question of why is it, why do I need to learn from this, I have to be dedicated to that learning.
Yes.
It's not just an answer to a question. It's acting out of, or acting out of that truth of who I am. Let's see, where am I at here? Finish this paragraph. We're going to tell you something important. The changes that come are the changes you need. In other words, the changes you've already asked for as well. But the lessons may not be known to you as the changes are happening. You always have the impulse to protect what you have had. That's an interesting one. You can decide that for yourself. You always have the impulse to protect what you have had. If there is a dam with a leak, you want to hold the dam in place. But what the leak is doing is preparing to open the dam to wash away the old so that the new may be known. And the new will not be known unless the dam breaks. There's lots of ways of looking at that. First thought that comes to my mind is it's sort of like the process of surrender. The way the big book of AA describes it is the ego reaches a state of calamity and collapse. I call it my Popeye moment. I can't stand no more. I can't hold this up any. I can't hold this facade up any longer. And so it collapses, it falls. Now, what the ego thinks is when it dies, when it falls apart, that it's going to be a disaster happening. Really, what happens is it opens up the door for the divine self, or the consciousness of the divine self, to move in. And for some of us, that might happen all at once, like the dam breaking. And for others, it might be, well, I stick my finger in the hole here, and then I stick my finger in the hole over there. And it might be a gradual awakening that I can't hold this. I've run out of fingers, all right? I can't hold this up anymore. And it might not come crashing down on us so much as a little bit at a time we learn this particular lesson that we set out to learn.
Jerry?
Yeah, Paula?
I wanted to respond to Jim and the spiritual path and that he's on, that we're all on, and no matter what we are, but with this, that seems like more like we're into the finding out more, reading spiritual books. It almost is, feels like something that is brought into your life without a knowing intention. Like you could think about, oh, I want to be a vegetarian because maybe it will be more healthy for me, or I'm going to exercise more because I want to lose weight, all these different reasons, and it's healthy for me. But I know for me, people entered my life without me even thinking about wanting to go down a certain path that led me on the path. And then there's no turning back. It's not something like you can go off of a certain diet. You can stop exercising, but I don't feel you can go off a spiritual directive path. It may get more enhanced, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. The way Ram Dass put it was, when you wake up, you can't go to sleep again.
Yeah.
You can doze. You can fall into forgetfulness occasionally, right? But you're never gonna be that unaware again. You can try to hide that, but you can't really.
And one other thing, I mean, you guys talk a lot about, you know, the book from AA, which I've heard about as well. I sometimes wonder why we all don't have that book, because I know it is, well, it's so spiritually centered. Everything they are talking about that you mentioned, and I've known people in AA and have seen that, it's as much a spiritual book as any book we read, maybe more so.
I tend to agree.
A 12-step recovery from life.
Yes, exactly, Jim.
Hey, you know, and we're all addicted in some way or another. We've all got our Jones. More
we
than
do.
One usually, okay? One last thought. I think what the book is hinting at is that you can't make changes in your life until you're ready to make them. Ram Dass called it the holy celibate syndrome, the horny celibate syndrome. He said, let's suppose on my spiritual path, I decide that I need to be celibate. Well, if that's true for you, that's fine, right? But if you're doing that just to create a cause for yourself, it's probably not going to work. You know, it's going to, in fact, it's going to take up more thinking or more thought on yourself than it would anybody. So here I am. It's like quitting smoking. When was your last cigarette? Well, let's see. My last cigarette was 5 years, 2 months, 1 week, 5 days, and 20, 30 hours ago. Or somebody might add, when did you quit? I say, I have no idea. I know it happened, but I'm not quite sure when it happened. That I'm not attached to that anymore. Okay. Okay, we're going to take a couple minutes to close up. I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. You can close your eyes if you like. Couple of deep breaths. And allow yourself to consciously soften again. And let yourself be. You don't have to be anything but what you are. What is your growing edge? What is it that you are called to do in this moment, or to be, or to examine, or to transform? You don't have to do anything with it right now. It's simply getting an answer to that question. And there could be many growing edges, but let your heart pick one. And once you become aware of that, whatever it is, notice if you have the desire and the willingness to put that into action. And if you want to, but not quite ready to yet, let yourself be okay with wanting to want to. Or to be willing to be willing. And to simply be open to that energy of transformation that you are allowing to happen in your life through your alignment with Divine Spirit. And with a sense of love, gratitude, and dedication, allow yourself to breathe deeply again. Stretch a bit. Open your eyes when you're ready. Paul, I was reminded of a book. I can't remember the author right now, but it's a book called The 12 Steps for Everyone.
Ah.
I'll see if I can find it for you and send you the information, okay?
Okay, great.
And for all of us who are here, thank you so much for being here. Hope you have a blessed New Year's. We'll see you again soon, okay?
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Jerry.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you.
Pardon me?
Everyone.
Good to see you, Betty. Betsy.
Good to see you all.